You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Welcome to another episode of My Favorite Things, and I'm going to talk about a few of my favorite things. What does it mean to be a favorite? Well, it means I'm super excited about recommending it. It might mean something I was excited about just this past week or something I've been doing research on. So without further ado, let's get started. I saw a movie. I had never heard of this movie. Someone recommended it to me. It's a movie from 1989. It's called Lean on Me. It's like a young Morgan Freeman. And I loved this movie. I would highly recommend it. By the way, I knew of the song Lean on Me, and this was a movie named Lean on Me. I had never even heard of the movie, but Lean on Me, I would highly recommend. The guy who sang Lean on Me, which is Bill Withers, most incredible singer. He sang some of my favorite songs, like Grandma's Hands and Hope She'll Be Happier. They're very sad songs. Like, you almost want to cry when you listen to them, but he's just got this beautiful voice. And sometimes I stand in front of a mirror and try to imitate his voice. He's got a very like smooth kind of voice. But what I really admire about Bill Withers is he was disgusted with his record label. I think it was Columbia Records. And they kept, as he became more and more famous, they kept trying to control the music he wanted, he should do. Like, they thought he would be more popular if you do X, Y, or Z. And meanwhile, he's saying to them, you just release an album by Mr. T, an actor, and you're not releasing the album I want to do, and I'm a professional at this with a bunch of Grammys, and I've sold millions of records. So he quit the record label, and I don't think he ever really performed again. Like, he did a little bit here and there, but he basically left the musical business. Also, he wasn't like some young kid when he broke out. He was 32 years old when his first song came out. So not that that's old, but shows that you don't have to be like 19 years old and beautiful to have a great career in the music business. So I really admire this guy. I listen to all his songs, Bill Withers. But the movie Lean on Me with Morgan Freeman, I think it's the best acting I've ever seen him do. And he basically plays, it's based on a true story of a rundown high school in Paterson, New Jersey, right near where I grew up, actually. And he becomes the principal, and You have to see the movie. I'm not giving anything away. But great movie. I just saw it this week. Jay, first, did you see any movies this week?
Oh, yeah. Last week, this weekend, actually, I saw this movie called Argyle. Have you heard of it?
Argyle? I've heard of Argo, but not Argyle. Argyle. So Argyle's like kind of like a sweater pattern for wasps?
Yes, right, I think. But the movie is basically, it's like a spy plus novel plus comedy. Like, it's a lighthearted spy. Have you heard of The Kingsman? The movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's by the same, I would say the same, almost the same production team. I think the same editor, same producer, same director, sort of in the same
It's got an all-star cast.
I know.
Samuel L. Jackson,
exactly.
Sam Rockwell, Bryan Cranston, Henry Cavill, Dua Lipa, who I don't know who that is, but I've heard the name a lot.
She's a singer.
And John Cena is a professional wrestler. He's in it.
Yep.
Wow, that's crazy.
And also, when's the last time you've seen... When's the last time there is a lighthearted spy movie? Like James Bond get like more and more intense, right? Like, you know, it used to be like fun sort of spy movie that people can watch. But now, like the last one with Daniel Craig is like so intense and stuff like that. So this is like lighthearted, like comedy a little bit.
All right, well, because I outsource all of my critical thinking to the internet, I'm going to use Google to search spy comedy films. You ever think about that? Like every new technology that's developed, and I'm not being anti-technology. I think technology is great and it improves my life almost every new thing that comes along. But basically, with GPS, we outsource our ability to find things. With calculators, we outsource our math ability. With Google, we've outsourced our memory. And now with AI, we're starting to outsource our critical thinking. Okay, so 15 best spy comedy films ranked. And you have The Man Who Knew Too Little with Bill Murray. I've never even heard of that
movie.
I've
never heard of that.
Get Smart with...
Oh, yeah. Steve Carell.
Yeah. I didn't want to see it because I like the TV series from the 60s.
But it was great.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh, yes. That was fun, too.
Austin Powers, of course. All right, wait, hold up. I'm just going to scroll to number one.
Is Austin Powers considered a spy movie, though?
I think it's not. But, oh, and look, guess what? Number one is, guess.
Argyle.
No, Kingsman.
Kingsman. Dude, you got to watch Kingsman. Kingsman is such a fun movie. So, like, you don't have too much substance in it, but, like it's like a family fun movie. Just watch it with your family, with your kids, with Robin. It's so much fun. You have to watch Kingsman 1 and then Kingsman 2 and then, you know, the prequel to Kingsman. They have, like, a whole universe they're building upon it.
Okay, so my recommendation on movies was a serious, well-acted, well-written movie based on a true story, Lean on Me, starring Morgan Freeman, one of Morgan Freeman's first, I think. And yours is lighthearted,
yes,
spy comedy, which, who knows, I'm not judging, and I will see it. I will watch it. My other pick for the movies, though, and this was the one I saw about a month ago, was Roman J. Israel.
Oh.
That's the name of the movie, starring Denzel Washington, a lesser-known Denzel Washington movie. First off, I think Denzel Washington might be my favorite actor. I've been going through a phase where I'm basically just watching one by one every single Denzel Washington movie. And, like, I love American Gangster. I just love about every movie he's in. And The Equalizer, have to recommend those. As we talked about Ip Man last week, The Equalizer movies are incredible. Just as good as Ip Man, I think. Well, it depends. If you're super into kung fu movies, then Ip Man over Equalizer. But Roman J. Israel, he plays kind of this almost nerdy, on the spectrum, sort of civil rights lawyer, defense lawyer, doesn't really know how to communicate with people. And he just makes $500 a week as a lawyer. And then suddenly his boss, who was always kind of like shielding him from the real world, dies and he can't get a job. He doesn't know what to do. And it's really interesting what happens. A little older movie. Denzel Washington, though, one of his best, I think. Roman J. Israel. Did you ever listen to the podcast? It had a great name. It's called Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor Ever. Period.
I heard about it, but because we talk about it all the time, but I never watch it.
Because I love the name of it. I love the fact that they write that the word period is part of the title. It's great.
Right.
And then I saw a TV series this past week. Like Robin and I binge watched for three straight days this TV series. My daughter Molly recommended it to me, and it's called Pen15. PEN15. We watched it, I think, on Amazon, but it was produced by Hulu, so I don't quite understand it. But Pen15, and it's worth seeing. It's basically It reminds me of the TV series Freaks and Geeks, which was one of Judd Apatow's first ever shows slash movies. And Freaks and Geeks, I should add, is almost a historical sitcom to watch. It only lasted for one season and then NBC canceled it. But it's the first, Judd Apatow wanted to hire all new actors. And so here are some of the new actors he hired for Freaks and Geeks. James Franco had never acted before. Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, and Martin Starr, who's in Silicon Valley. Linda Cardellini, who is in a ton of stuff. You'll recognize her once you see it. But it's interesting that Seth Rogen and James Franco, this is their first appearance on acting on any show or movie. But anyway, Pen 15 is a little like Freaks and Geeks. It's basically about two 13-year-old girls surviving seventh grade. And that, if that sounds like awful to you, believe me, it's not awful. Like, at first, why would I watch that? But A, my daughter recommended it. She has good taste. But C, I saw that the Lonely Island guys were producing it. So Lonely Island is Andy Samberg and his friends. You might remember them from the very first song to ever go viral on YouTube. The first song to have over 100 million views on YouTube was a funny song by Andy Samberg called Lazy Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was him and Chris Darnell, something like that. And then, of course, he's on Brooklyn 99.
Yep.
He's done a bunch of movies. He was on Saturday Night Live. Super funny guy. But Lazy Sunday was great. But anyway, I didn't even know he was producing shows. So he produces the show Pen 15. And the two women who write it, it's about their experiences as 13-year-olds. And they play themselves. They're two women who are 38 years old. And they play themselves as 13-year-olds. And you really believe they're 13 years old. It's kind of funny because it's not until like halfway through that I sort of realized, oh, they're not 13 years old. And one of them, Maya Erskine, she's now starring in the TV series Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So, yep. I mean, and they won a bunch of Emmys for Pen 15. It was just on in 2023, just last year. But it was really great. There's two seasons. It wasn't canceled. They specifically planned on it being two seasons. And it's really worth watching. It's funny in this kind of almost cringy way sometimes because 13-year-old seventh graders are often cringy. And it really reminded me of not only of my own experiences at that age, but then I thought about my daughters when they were that age. And it's a very sweet show.
That's so cool.
And funny.
That's cool. I started watching Atlanta.
Oh my God, that is the best show ever. It's a sitcom starring Childish Gambino. I always forget if he's Danny Glover or Donald Glover. I think Donald Glover. Oh, by the way, he's the Mr. Smith and Mrs. Smith. And Maya Erskine is Mrs. Smith. So that's funny. So the two shows we're watching are both somehow connected to a TV show we didn't watch, which is Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I guess now we're going to have to watch that.
Yeah.
But I would say Atlanta is probably the most creative sitcom ever made, and it has a lot of great competition for that, including Curb Your Enthusiasm, Dave, Freaks and Geeks, Arrested Development, Larry Sanders Show, and some other classics. Atlanta is really just a great story, but great experiments that don't disrupt the story. Really funny, well acted. Donald Glover is just amazing in it, and it's just an all around good show. And just by coincidence, I live near Atlanta.
Yeah, so, but isn't...
And so do you.
But Atlanta, it's a little bit more greedy compared to all the other shows that you just mentioned, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, it's... Well, people will see...
They have to watch it.
When they see why.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, all right, so Atlanta, Pen 15, Lean on Me, maybe Argyle, I'm not convinced.
Dude, you have to watch it, Argyle.
I will watch it.
I have to say, I also watched Spirited Away as well this past weekend.
You know, Spirited Away, so okay, that's an animation. What's it, Studio?
Ghibli?
How do you say it?
Ghibli?
Yeah, Ghibli.
Yeah.
Ghibli, something like that.
Yep.
And it's probably the best animated movie I've ever seen. But again, I saw it around 20 years ago. Is that possible? Did it come out more than 20 years ago?
It came out in 2020. It came out in 2001 or 2000.
Yeah, I used to watch that. I've probably watched that 10 times. It's really, the animation is just great. I don't know if they do animation like that anymore.
No.
What's the most recent movie by that studio?
The Boy and the Heron. Boy and
I don't know.
Yeah, how do you pronounce H-E-R-O-N?
I think Heron. Yeah.
Yeah, The Boy and the Heron. It just came out. People loved it. It's 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's by Studio Ghibli.
You can't. It's almost impossible to hate that movie. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh yeah, it's impossible to hate that studio. The studio is good, and also like this type of movie, it's just heartwarming, and it always takes me off the reality. Like sometimes when I watch movie, I don't want to watch something too real, too close to reality. You know.
Yeah, like you know, it's interesting. Most movies are very visual. And then you get a feeling for based on the acting and the writing, it creates the emotions inside you while you're watching it. But Studio Ghibli, just the way it's animated also creates this emotion that's really kind of, to use Robert Greene's word, sublime. Like it's a very sublime kind of movie. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs. And I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away. And I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb. But there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I was just talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. immediately after you post your job. ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. There's something else I did completely different this week, which is I wanted to research, again, for my kids, I wanted to research websites. I always tell my kids, oh, why don't you try making money online? But I never have really evidence to back it up. So I wanted to research some websites where they could potentially make some money. I found what I expected to find, which is that, so on Instagram, there's all these accounts that go to these websites and you can make $5,000 a week. So a lot of those websites that those accounts refer to are just BS or they're scams, or you don't really make, you might make a dollar a week, but not $5,000 a week. But there's two that I think you might have a chance. One is Audible. So you go to acx.com, which is Audible's kind of back-end website. You make an account, you click on the button that says find projects. So that means projects are books that have been written where the author doesn't want to read the audiobook. Why wouldn't the author want to read the audiobook? It is really unpleasant to read an audiobook. Like I can't schedule anything before or at, when I've read every one of my audiobooks, and I can never schedule anything before, several days before or several days after, because I got to rest my throat before and then my throat is just shot afterwards. And it's about 2 days to read an audiobook. You know, let's say it's around 60 or 70,000 words, and my throat's hurting so much afterwards. But that's why authors, that creates an opportunity. So you could make, you honestly could, like a romance novel that would take you about 2 or 3 days to read, you could probably get paid $4,000 or $5,000 in a few days reading a romance novel, for instance. And there's hundreds and hundreds of projects at any given point where you could get paid anywhere from $100 to like $5,000 to read that book. So that is a site where you could potentially make money from home or in a studio or whatever, and make your own hours and so on. Another one, a site that I found, Text Broker, TextBroker.com. And it's a site for writing reviews. So let's see, it's like you could write, actually you could write basic articles, in-depth articles. It's kind of like a marketplace where people who need content pay people who write content. So it's not just reviews. I take that back. It's articles. It's all sorts of things. So I should have had some examples, but I have to fill out like a whole questionnaire to apply and so on. But apparently I've Googled around. Apparently you can make some pretty good money per week on Text Broker, and there's always stuff to do. So I've actually hired someone once to write a book for me, not a book that I am proud of. I wanted to do an experiment, as I always do. And I wanted to see what would happen if I completely plagiarized 50 Shades of Grey, except I used a synonym for every word. So instead of saying, you know, I had a test at school, I would say I was taking an exam at my high school or whatever. So I wanted to, so nobody would actually see any words that were in 50 Shades of Grey, but it would be the exact same book word for word, except every word was a synonym from the original 50 Shades of Grey. And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I can't even remember what I called it because it's on Amazon. Then I self-published. So I paid some guy like $500 and he did this work in about a week. I don't know how he did it so fast. Probably used some premature AI thing. Jay, do you remember what I called? Do you even know this that I did this?
Yeah. I designed a cover.
It's something where the... Oh, you designed the cover. Okay, well, yeah. What's the book called?
I can't remember what it's the book called, but you use a fake name, Jackie Ling or something?
Oh, yeah. No, I used something that was the initials for J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
So, John Kenneth Rowling, maybe?
No, it's Jackie King something.
So, Jay, thank you for finding the book. I was just disconnected from the podcast, and that allowed you time to find the book. So, the name of the book is How to Satisfy a Billionaire by Jackie King. And I just want to read the first sentence. I frown with dissatisfaction at myself in the mirror. Damn my hair. It simply won't work out the way I want. And damn Cindy Woodworth for being sick and subjecting me to this experience. I ought to be concentrating on my last, most decisive tests, which are 1 week from now. Yet here I am attempting to brush my hair into the style I want. So let me see. What's the first sentence of 50 Shades of Grey? Because it should be the exact same, but with different words.
Well, also, I'm curious, like, what's the FK score of this one that you did?
Oh, that is a good question. So the FK score, the Fisher Kincaid score, is a Fisher Kincaid calculator will take the whole text of your book or article or story or whatever and will tell you the Fisher Kincaid score of it, which will tell you the grade level that you're writing at. And people think, oh, the better the book, the higher the grade level. That's not true. If you write a book or an article or a blog post or whatever that's at like a 10th grade level or an 11th grade level, that is a horrible, horrible book. Ernest Hemingway's book, Old Man and the Sea, which actually is literally 1 foot away from me. It's right in front of me. Old Man and the Sea, one of the best books ever written. It probably caused him to win the Nobel Prize in 1952, I think. It is written at, I believe, a fifth grade level. So whenever I write, and particularly whenever I write a book, I am constantly checking the Fisher Kincaid score to see I am no higher than a sixth grade level. But I'll check the FK score in a second of my classic book that someone else wrote.
Okay.
But first, I want to see the first sentence of 50 Shades of Grey. Oh, let's see if I can find it.
All right. While you're finding it, can I read you something that's really good? So we got five-star review on Amazon for the
book.
You're
kidding.
Yes. So this this person, I'm pretty sure it's like a bot, but this person named Aristotle Case, and a 5-star review. One of the best books I've ever read. And it says, an incredibly gripping, original, and sexy story told from the perspective of a girl plagued by with the monotony of everyday life. When a chance opportunity allows her to step outside of the mold, Brenda dares where lesser women might cower. Another brilliant work by Jackie King, story of a shy girl, proves that provocative fiction is still alive and well. And two people found that helpful.
There you go. Well, okay, so again, the first sentence, I frown with dissatisfaction at myself in the mirror, is from How to Satisfy a Billionaire. And the first sentence of 50 Shades of Grey is, I scowl with frustration at myself in the mirror. Okay, he left mirror, but I don't know. Maybe there's no synonyms for mirror. I scowl with frustration at myself in the mirror. And this again, this is the second sentence of 50 Shades of Grey. Damn my hair. It just won't behave. And damn Catherine Kavanaugh for being ill and subjecting me to this ordeal. I should be studying for my final exams. Whereas in the classic book, How to Satisfy a Billionaire, the second sentence was, damn my hair. Okay, he left that. It simply won't work out the way I want. And damn Cindy Woodworth for being sick and subjecting me to this experience. I ought to be concentrating on my last and most decisive tests. So anyway, I don't recommend that book. I would give it 1 star. It was an experiment, and guess what? It hardly sold any copies at all. How many reviews does it have, Jay?
6 reviews.
All right, well.
But
more reviews than some of my books.
I think it's 1 review, but 6 ratings. So people can rate, right? They don't have to leave reviews. They can rate.
Good books or whatever.
No, on Amazon.
You know why I was thinking I was J.K. Rowling? There's another book I once wrote. I did another experiment a few years earlier than this. I wanted to see if I could write and publish a novel in a weekend. And I'm not going to bother finding this book, but I wrote the autobiography of Prince William's son. So it was called, all right, now I got to find it. The autobiography. And it was an autobiography, but it was only 3 days old. It's so underappreciated, this book, that Amazon's not even filling in the blanks. Okay, the autobiography of Prince George Alexander Lewis Windsor, because that's his full name, Prince William's son. And it got 15 ratings. It has 2.9 stars. And it's only 31 pages, which just, I wanted to show too. You could just write, I call it a novel or an autobiography, whatever. I have the Kindle edition. And I did it in a weekend. I published it July 31st, 2013, just 2 months after I published Choose Yourself. And the top review is a 1-star review by G. Kenny Burroughs. Wonder why, what is the G is? I guess George. It's 1-star. It's titled, the review is titled Rubbish. Suggestions in this book are crude and ludicrous. I would not recommend it to anyone, even though it was a freebie.
That guy must be British.
Yeah. And then, but another one is, okay, this is 3 stars by Marianne Anderson. Not bad for a 3-day-old baby. Because, of course, it's. I think he's typing it out to his butler, who is John Kenneth Rowling, wrote the foreword, and like his valet or whatever. So, and another, here's a 5-star, interesting concept. So anyway, these are not recommendations. Although actually this one was kind of good. I had a fun time writing that one. But let's move on to my favorite things. How to Satisfy a Billionaire and this autobiography are not among my favorite things. I just want to make that clear.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
I wanted to recommend this one book that has been a favorite of mine for a long time, actually. And I probably reread this about once a year, which is How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World by Harry Brown. Now, Harry Brown is an interesting character. He was like a libertarian, I guess. He was the libertarian candidate for president at one point, I think in 2000. And I don't care about his political beliefs at all, but it was just, he talks about freedom in every possible way. It's not a political book. It's almost a self-help book, but not quite. But he talks about these things called boxes. And a box is any situation that restrains your freedom. So for instance, a bad job. If you think you're obligated to stay at your job, that's like, and you hate it, that's a box. Like Jay is in a box right now, being the podcast producer here.
Exactly.
Or if you're stuck in a bad marriage, or if you don't enjoy like the college you're at, or the relationship you're in, or some social obligation you have to go to, these are all types of boxes. And his point is that you're paying a price to stay in that box. So for instance, if you don't like your job, the price you're paying is that you could potentially be in another job. And so his whole point is that every situation that restrains your freedom, there is a price you're paying to stay in that situation, and there's a price you can pay to get out of that situation. And so he suggests, and I'll just read this real quickly. If there's a box in your life, big or little, let me suggest a simple method of putting it in focus. Take a few minutes away from everything else. Find a comfortable chair in a quiet room where you can consider the problem without interruption. First, identify the box. And even though this is sort of obvious, this is me talking, even though this is sort of obvious, a lot of people don't do this. I don't often do this. What is it that's causing you the discomfort? For example, suppose you've lied to someone and now find it difficult to maintain the lie. You're no longer able to express yourself freely for fear of saying something that would contradict the lie. Or perhaps your weekends are continually interrupted by relatives who drop in and monopolize your only free time. Or maybe you've made a commitment to contribute money to a particular cause, but now you wish you were free to spend the money elsewhere. Whatever it is, identify the discomfort the box causes. Next, think of what you would do if you weren't in the box. At first, the only advantage you could think of might be the absence of the discomfort. But in some way, the box is preventing you from doing something you'd prefer to do. And if it were removed, you'd be free to take advantage of desirable alternatives. Imagine the box gone, and then imagine what you do once you were free of it. Blah, blah, blah. The next step is to identify the price it would take to get out of the box. As I said earlier, it may not even occur to you that there is a price that would get you out, but there is always a way out. If you were to walk out of the box right now, what would it cost you? What would happen that you've been dreading? The price could be fearful or it could be trivial, but there is a price that could get you out of the situation. If you've lied to someone, you may have to admit that you lied to get out of the box. If so, the price might be the shame of admitting the lie, or the loss of the person's friendship, or the time involved to reestablish a reputation for honesty, or possibly all of those things. The price might be a confrontation with someone, such as telling your spouse you don't want to remain married, telling your boss you want a better arrangement if you're going to continue to work for him, or breaking off a relationship with a friend or relative who brings you only grief. Identify what you have to do in order to end your present discomfort. Then picture yourself paying that price. It may be painful just to think about it, but try. And his point is, as you go through these mental exercises, it'll get less and less painful to imagine yourself paying that price. And at the end, I've identified three elements of the box. What you're paying by remaining where you are, two, what it would cost to get out, and three, what you could do once you're out. And then he talks about different traps, different boxes. What does it mean to be a quote-unquote expert? There's titles like, go to the table of contents. The group trap, the government trap, the despair trap, the rights trap, the utopia trap, why you are not free, identity traps. Anyway, I highly recommend as a book to improve your life, whether you follow the ideas in it or not. I don't always follow every idea in this book, but it's just a very fresh, enlightening way of thinking, and I highly recommend it. How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World.
I just bought the book.
I was that convincing. I'm glad.
Yeah, it's very convincing. Yeah.
So it's really good. It's been an inspiration to me over the years or decades. And just also, I'll say I read a pretty good novel this past week, How to Stop Time by Matt Haig. And it's about a guy who has an unusual illness, which is that he ages at a rate of about 15 to 1 compared with everyone else. So he only looks 1 year older every 15 years. And so he's about 400 years when the book's written. And I mean, the main character is about 400 years old when the book starts. And it's a very enlightening novel. Matt Haig, H-A-I-G, is a very good novelist. And I love this book. Jay, you read any good books this week?
I'm reading it very slowly, but I'm trying to finish Clear Thinking by our friend Shane Parrish.
Oh yeah, Parrish? Shane was a great guy. Great podcast. Yeah, a great book.
Came on. But I do have one thing my favorite topic to talk with my friends, and I don't know how I feel about it. Do you remember you did an episode with Merrick, your good friend, about numbers? Everyone has a number in life.
A right? Number, like a financial number of where they feel comfortable, they would retire.
Yeah. So I spoke to my, a couple of friends, a couple of my friends. I'm like, okay, what's your numbers? Like, what will you want to make a year? They're like, I don't know. And then I'm like, oh, ideally, if I could, I would maybe want to make about $5 to $10 million. And then they're all like, isn't that too much? Do you really need $5 to $10 million? I'm like, I might not need it, but it's good to have it. It's good to, you know, dream for the moonshot.
Well, what number did they think? Why did they think that? Let's just take 5 million. Let's take the lower boundary. Why did they think that 5 million was not enough?
No,
it was too much. What did they think was the right number?
So one of my friends making about like 60, 70.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, they're like, well, I'm pretty comfortable where I am right now. If I make anything more, I would just donate to the charity.
So
some of them is like 150.
She makes $60,000 and yes. and that's what she said. But she
I would say
kids.
Like 70, 80. No kids. But
okay,
like,
well,
I'm just
the problem
like
is
guessing.
Kids add significantly. But okay, let's just say $80,000 a year is what she makes. So after taxes, let's just say $80,000. So right now in a checking account, what does your bank give you if you put money in a checking account?
I think it's 0.34% or so. Like, it's very, very low.
I could be wrong, though. So let me see. I'm just going to type Wells Fargo savings account. I'm outsourcing my thinking again, my memory to Google.
Yeah. And then I was talking with a friend of mine, which is your enemy, because he works for IRS.
Oh, you have a friend in the IRS?
Exactly.
You didn't tell me that.
I was about to surprise you. Shut
the podcast down.
No, I'm just kidding. I was about to introduce you in person because he's very fascinating. He works for IRS, but on the estate department. So he will handle like people die and then he will handle all the like how much.
We should have him on the podcast if he's allowed to talk about it.
I think he's allowed to. If you want to, I can hook it up.
Well, just ask him. I know he's probably not allowed as my. So
I think
so,
he's allowed to.
Okay, so let me see. I've clicked four buttons that say view rates and I still haven't gotten to anything. Now it wants to put in my zip code.
That's how bank gets you. They're like, oh, we have higher rate, but you have to click five buttons to get to the actual rate. But trust us, we will give you the best rate.
Okay, so $1 million or more in a platinum savings account is 2.5%. Oh, but a 7-month CD, fixed rate CD, well, 7 months is not that long. That's about 5%. So, okay, let's say she could get 5% on her money, your friend, and she needs to make $80,000 a year. So she needs to have she needs to have $4 million. That's her number.
Yeah.
She needs to have a little bit more because there's inflation. So assuming like 3 or 4% inflation, to make $80,000 a year, you probably need to have like $5, $6, $7 million in the bank.
Right, but that's pre-tax, right? Like if she's making $80K right now,
But the savings account also is pre-tax. You pay taxes on your so she's got to have about minimum. Oh wait, am I doing this wrong? I think I'm doing this wrong. Sorry.
That's way too much. Like $4 million for $80K.
Yeah, no. You're right. She needs like between
400.
She needs like between 2 and 3 million.
Yeah,
to like make $80,000 a year.
Yeah, but like, you know, we're just talking about like how much you want to make a year, salary or whatever.
But that's it's related to the number though, right? Because
unless you're gonna
just spend all the money, but you can't do that because you might live longer than you know. So you have to live off the interest. You can't dip into the money if you're not going to do anything else for money. So she probably needs. Well, to make $80,000 a year right now, she would need minimum $1.6 million if she's going to put it in these fixed rate CDs. Probably need a little bit more because you need to have money that's not necessarily in CDs. So she probably needs like $2.5 million right now. But then taking into account inflation, so inflation, the value of your dollar is cut in half roughly every
2 years.
No, 30 years.
Yeah, because it's 8%, right?
No, inflation right now, I mean, inflation, the target rate of inflation is between 2 and 3%. Let's just, like right now, inflation's at 3%. 3%, the way you figure it out, the way you figure out how much prices, how long it takes something to double in price is you take the percentage that's increasing and divide that, divide 71 by that number, and it's about 23 years for the value of everything to get cut in half if inflation's at 3%. So assuming she's going to at least live another 30 years, she kind of needs roughly double the two million, you know. So she probably needs, yeah, she probably needs about 4 million is her number.
Wait, as in like every year or like just in general?
No, she probably needs, okay. I don't know how to do the exact math. She probably needs between 3 and 4 million if she's going to quit her job, live off the interest, and live for the rest comfortably for the rest of her life.
Gotcha.
And by the way, not increase at all her spending. So this assumes no kids, stuff like that. So that's why you could add a little bit, like, okay, a kid's college education costs $200,000 if she's going to send her kid to Harvard or whatever, and so she's going to need to have that much extra on top of the 3 million. And again, she's the money has to be big enough so that she can handle the inflation. She probably needs to buy a house now to avoid inflation and rent. Like you could avoid some inflation by buying things now that are going to last you forever. And then she can't ever move out of that house. Or if she does, the house has to go up by inflation. So her number probably is between 3 and 4 million. So your 5 million is not that far off.
Yeah.
Like else does she expect to make $80,000 a year?
Yeah, but like I'm talking about just making $5 million a year for myself. Like
oh, $5 million a year. Are you crazy? What do you need $5 million a year for?
What? Well, okay. So I mean that just
what
I
are
mean,
you gonna buy okay, with $5 million?
Well, okay, so let's say if I marry someone that have like some sort of medical conditions, like have to go to a hospital.
Doesn't she have insurance?
Yeah, but how much insurance cover?
Okay, well, look, don't So you need to make $5 million a year because you're going to be with some quadriplegic who's going to the hospital all the time? Like, is that what your plan is?
I want to live comfortably. Okay,
forget about the invalid that you're marrying. Like, how are you going to spend $5 million a year?
Okay. First of all, buy a couple cars. Buy a nice house.
Okay. How much is a car?
Okay, let's say nice. Okay, I'm not going too crazy. Just like Tesla or whatever.
How much
maybe
is a
like
Tesla?
50K. It's like 50K, like the normal one. Okay, like the good ones, 100K.
Buy five of those cars every year. That's $250,000. You're not even getting close to 5 million.
Well, yeah, but like,
you're not going to buy a house every year, and a house is equity. You get equity in a house, so you it's not like you lose the money. You could mortgage the money out of it eventually, but. What else do you want to spend money on?
Food? Flying food. Around?
Flying around on what? Are you flying around on
Like
Boeing 747? Okay, well look. So how much does a plane cost?
I don't know. How much does the
a good private plane, like a Boeing, like Taylor Swift's plane probably costs like $150 million. But you could just use you know, there's plenty of jet leasing, like Wheels Up or Surf Air or NetJets is the most famous one. There's our old friend Jesse Itzler had Marquee Jets that he sold to NetJets. So you need $100,000 a year, or realistically, you need like $300,000 or $400,000 a year, and you could take like 10 vacations on private jets with that. Right. So I would say even with someone with your extravagant tastes, the max you would need to make per year before taxes is 2 million. But that's only if you want to fly private everywhere and buy five Teslas and have a 20,000 square foot, house in a suburb of New York City or something. So, because then your mortgage will be high. But that's even high. But I would say, okay, if you really want to live like a billionaire, meaning fly private everywhere, have a big house, have the most expensive car. No one could tell, trust me on this, no one could tell if you're a billionaire or a single-digit millionaire if you make $2 million a year. That is more than enough. And probably even making $1 million a year, you could almost act as if you were a billionaire. There won't be any difference between you and a billionaire in terms of your expenses.
Okay, so you think $2 million it's reasonable. And also like not two is it $2 million in cash or like, you know, just net
$2 million
worth
in cash.
$2 million? Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. But that would mean your number is about $40 to $50 million that you'd have to have in the bank to retire. Now, so that's why I'm saying that's the most extravagant you could possibly be. Most people, I think your $5 to $10 million was more accurate.
So what? How much do you think, like, reasonably, someone's number should be? Like you said, like, so $5 to $10 million, it's about right.
I think if you have between 10 and 20, no one could tell. You could live a life and have a lifestyle where nobody could tell the difference between you and a billionaire. Which means basically you could do anything you want, except you can't buy expensive art, you can't buy a football team, you can't build a bunker in an island you own off of New Zealand to protect against the apocalypse. So you just, but you can fly private everywhere you want, and you can have the biggest, like your neighbors could be billionaires, you could buy a big house and live as comfortably as you want. And that's if your number's between 10 and 20 million. If you're satisfied with less than that, though, there's nothing wrong with that. I think the minimum number is probably 7 million in the bank, and that takes care of any medical situations, colleges for your kids, and you could live off the interest in general. Or depending on your investment strategy, you could live off what you make on investments.
Okay, so I should strive for 7 million. It's a good number, though.
This speaks to the importance of really studying investing, because the better investor you are, the less you have to have, the lower your number is, because you can make more on the money you have.
Yeah, so not investing in Dogecoin and stuff like that will help.
Yeah, don't invest in Dogecoin. Although, who's to say maybe it'll go up, but that's not a good investing strategy to invest in something that has absolutely zero, you know, fundamental value.
Right, so, which I did a couple years ago, so...
Well, you probably have done well then, because Dogecoin's done well.
But it's like
what Annie Duke says, though, is that you can make a decision that makes you money, but it's still a bad decision, and vice versa. You can make a good decision that sometimes loses money, but the decision-making process was correct.
Gotcha.
So anyway, that is this week's My Favorite Things. Next week, I'll dive a little bit more into, or 2 weeks from now, I'll dive a little bit more into investing books and whatever other movie shows. Whatever. I find that I'm always, and send me recommendations, because I am always looking for good TV shows to watch, movies to watch. Both Pen 15, by the way, if you write out Pen 15, you know what the real name of the show is. But Pen 15 and Lean on Me were both recommendations I got in the past 2 weeks, and I love them. So thank you to Molly Altucher, who gave me Pen 15, and the woman who cuts my hair, who gave me Lean on Me. So, and Jay, thank you so much for producing this podcast.
All right.
You're my favorite podcast producer.
You're my favorite host.
Excellent.
All right. See ya.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.